I spend most mornings trying, usually in vain, to teach my 9-year-old son Gil math or science that I've long forgotten. Like the time 2 weeks ago that we tried to grow sea monkeys. It did not go well. Now, the math mostly comes from my mom, a retired middle school math teacher, over FaceTime.
How many times will 5/6 fit into that ugly number?
I'm not sure.
I'm not either.
Well, we're gonna find out.
Which goes well until his 3-year-old brother joins in.
5/6.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Exactly.
Good job, Amos.
This, of course, is what parents across the country and the world are doing, struggling to teach their kids as schools are closed because of the coronavirus pandemic. We try to be creative, but I can see now why it's tempting for teachers to just give kids a worksheet and call it a day. I've been thinking about what we would do if we weren't cooped up at home. Where would we go? We do live in Philadelphia, after all, a major city with tons of cultural sites, museums, and opportunities to learn that might actually be fun. And then I realized, shamefully, I haven't even been to a lot of those places myself. But now, a lot of them are offering virtual tours and more online resources for kids and parents muddling through homeschooling, like we are. So today, we're starting a series called Why Didn't I Go There? Join me and my son Gil for a virtual tour of a cool spot we just never got around to before all this started. First stop, Philly's Rosenbach Museum. Ready, Gil?
Ready.
I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov.
And I'm Gil Patrick Ben-Yaakov.
This is the Why. Our tour guide for this episode is Emily Parker. She's director of education at the Rosenbach. Hi, Emily.
Hi, Emily.
Hi, Shai. Hi, Gil. It's great to talk with you today.
So I was at the Rosenbach briefly, but I really have never gotten a chance to tour the museum. So for me and others listening, can you just give me a sense of how the museum got started and what it is, what you can find there?
Sure, yeah. It was founded in 1954 by the two Rosenbach brothers, Abraham and Philip Rosenbach. They were renowned Philadelphia book dealers. They actually owned a shop at 13th and Walnut, and they really had just traveled the world collecting rare books and manuscripts for their collection. Abraham Rosenbach was actually pretty well known as a book dealer. He had nicknames like the greatest book dealer in the world, the Napoleon of books, and just had a really, really successful reputation, particularly at book auctions. The Rosenbach brothers, I think, modeled this idea of not only amassing these collections, but then sharing them with the public. It was kind of almost like a private public library in a way. They were really one of the first ones to do that.
Like, the public library system, I assume, is much older than this. Was there a unique need that they saw for something like this?
You know, with the public library system, often, you know, the sturdier the better in terms of the book that's being circulated. But these kinds of more fragile, rare books and documents were really not shared with the public in the same way. So I think that that's what they were thinking, that this was giving access to the public to these kinds of documents that really only the wealthy used to have access to.
Are there any stories of like how he came to acquire, how the brothers came to acquire these books?
Yeah, I think that my favorite one was when Abraham was only 11 years old. His first book purchase was an illustrated edition of a book called Rainyard the Fox, and he bought it at an auction house for $24. And that was actually, it doesn't sound like very much, but it was a lot for him at that point in time. So he actually asked the auctioneer if he could make weekly payments instead of giving the guy all of the money at once. And the auctioneer said, yes, of course, you know, for a young bibliophile like you, we can do that. And so he paid for it out of his weekly allowance in installments.
You hear that, Gil? He paid out of his weekly allowance. Did you do something like that?
Yes, definitely. I've paid for many things out of my weekly allowance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
And for listeners who don't know, where is the museum?
It's just south of Rittenhouse Square, just a couple blocks south of Rittenhouse Square. And it's on a block with a bunch of other houses because the museum was actually the brothers' home before it turned into the museum. So it's just a really big house, about four stories high, brick townhouse.
And so Gil has not been to this museum before. Can you kind of just walk us through the museum, describe what you see just as vividly as you can?
Sure. So when we would first walk into the house, we'd see the brothers' living room, and then we'd walk out into the hallway, we would see their dining room, and then we could walk upstairs. We'd have to walk up two flights of stairs. The stairs are really, really fancy. They're covered in a carpet, and we could walk all the way up to the third floor where we would see Abraham Rosenbach's private library, where he had all of his books all around him with special reading chairs and a desk and things like that.
May I ask a question?
Of course.
When did they finish building the Rosenbach?
So they finished, it was already pretty much done when the Rosenbach brothers moved in. So all of the different rooms and things were there. But they kept buying furniture and books to fill their home right up until they both passed away. So they kept doing, you know, buying all these different things from all different places in the world and filling their home with all of these different things. And we actually continue to do that today. So we like to try to buy things that we think that they would have liked and put them in their house.
That's really cool. So like when they moved in, it was empty, and then they kept buying new furniture and more books until they died, and now it's a museum with all those books.
Exactly.
Cool.
Yeah, good question, Gil. When we come back, there's an outline of a person here. This is a person.
Wait, that's a...
This is The Why. I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov, here with my son, Gil. We're taking a virtual tour of Philly's Rosenbach Museum with Director of Education Emily Parker. The first exhibit is about a rare handwritten speech.
So Abraham Rosenbach actually bought it at an auction house, but luckily he was old enough that he had enough money he didn't have to pull from his allowance on a weekly basis.
The speech was delivered by one of the most famous Americans in history. I understand that you have a lesson that's prepared about some old books and papers relating to Abraham Lincoln, right?
We do, yep.
So, Gil, what do you know about Abraham Lincoln?
If I'm not mistaken, so I might be thinking of somebody else. Was he the president? I feel like he wasn't.
You got it.
Yeah.
You're exactly right. Yeah, he was president during the Civil War. So the document that I wanted you to look at today is a handwritten speech that he gave. So it was written in his hand. And the speech was called the Baltimore Address. It was given in the third year of the Civil War, in April of 1864. And the speech was given at this event in Baltimore to raise money for wounded soldiers that were wounded in the Civil War.
Gil, do you just want to read the beginning of the letter?
Sure. Ladies and gentlemen, calling to mind that we are in Baltimore, we cannot fail to note that the world moves. Looking upon these many people assembled here to serve as they best may, the soldiers of the Union, it occurs at once that 3 years ago, the same soldiers could not so much as pass through Baltimore. The change from then till now is both great and gratifying. Blessings on the brave men who have wrought the change and the fair women who strive to reward them for it.
So I wanted you to think, and this is a big question, imagine that you were president during the Civil War. What do you think you might tell people in your speech?
Well, I would probably, if I were president, I don't know about all presidents, but I would maybe give hope and pride to the soldiers to, like, to like urge them on, make them believe that we can win the Civil War, which we did.
We did. But they didn't at the time, of course, they didn't know that. So this was such a long war, they didn't realize it was gonna last as long as it did. So I think you're exactly right. They were looking for some hope and to kind of urge them forward a little bit. And I think in particular, I think it's just got a lot of contemporary relevance. It's really interesting to just think about what we would need to hear from a president during challenging times.
So what else is in the collection that you've kind of put forward for families to do online learning?
Well, we have a lot of things that are similar to this particular lesson. So looking at historical documents and letters. But one of the other exhibitions that we have focused on is an exhibition about Herman Melville, the author of Moby Dick. So that just recently went up online. And so we're focusing on that as well.
And I took a look at your website, and you do have some actual sounds that people can play to go along with the online exhibit, right?
Yeah. So the exhibit has actually, it did open in the museum before we closed the space. And so we have those sounds, they start playing automatically when you go into the gallery.
I love this. It really makes you feel like you're swimming with the whales.
We definitely wanted to make sure that was a part of the online experience because our visitors to the galleries really enjoyed those sounds.
Yeah. Have you heard of Moby Dick, Gil?
I have. I feel like it's about a dolphin or like a whale.
Yes, a whale. So I've got a few pictures here that I'm going to pull up that you've sent to Kelsey, our producer.
Yeah, so the book is really long and complicated, even for grown-ups. So that a couple of artists were actually hired to draw pictures to go along with the story. So the first thing that I wanted you both to do is just describe those two pictures. What do you see?
By the way, you can look at these images at our website, whyy.org/thewhy.
Well, the first one, I see, I don't know if it's sideways, but I see a whale, like, shooting water out of its nose. And then there are other dolphins, I think, or fish, that are swimming away.
Okay.
Down.
Right. He seems to be jumping out of the water, at least the way that the picture is oriented here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And sort of spouting water
and
out of
there. Spouting water.
And where is it from? Like, what is this? Where does this image come from?
So the image was illustrated by an artist named Rockwell Kent. And the Rockwell Kent image was in edition of Moby Dick from the 1930s. And then the other one was by an artist named Benton Spruance, and that was in an edition of the book from the 1960s.
And that one, I just flipped to that one.
And that one's in color.
Yes, it's in color.
Okay. How else is it different from the other one? Is it different besides the fact that it's in color?
Well, to me, it looks like, there's an outline of a person here. This is a person.
Wait, that's a... That's a person?
Yeah, I was wondering if you were going to notice that.
Oh my gosh. I didn't know that was a head. I thought that was like an asteroid.
Why do you think that the illustrator didn't make that person more clear? He probably could have.
Well,
but he decided that he didn't want to.
Because I think most artists want to make their art a little bit more obscure.
I mean, it's a really interesting image to me, and I have to be honest, I have not read Moby Dick either, although I'm somewhat familiar with the story. So this is this supposed to represent Captain Ahab?
Well, it could. I think what the illustrator was doing is allowing you to use your own imagination with that picture. Because it's so kind of fuzzy, the illustrator makes it a little bit easier for you to sort of imagine yourself in the picture, too.
Mm.
So there's not really a right answer to that one. And that's the case with a lot of art.
So You know, when we eventually kind of get back to some semblance of normal life, whenever that happens, you know, we would love to come and visit the Rosenbach. What are some more hands-on things that we could do when we actually are able to come and visit?
Yeah, so we definitely welcome school groups. So, you know, Gil could come with his school, but we would love for him to come visit with you as well. So we have all sorts of different things. We've got one program that I think is really unique, a series of tours called Behind the Bookcase Tours, where they're thematically focused on different topics and people get to actually handle things. Something like the Baltimore Address, you could actually pick up and hold.
You can like pick up and read the books?
Exactly. So you can flip through the pages.
That is so cool. I have to go here sometime.
Yeah, so yeah. We would love for you to come and do that with us when we're open again.
Thank you so much for taking us through this, albeit virtually, and I'm really looking forward to coming and visiting with Gil.
Oh, you're so welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gil.
When this is all over and I get to go, now I'm going to be sure to bring a notepad.
Definitely.
Emily Parker is Director of Education at the Rosenbach Museum in Philadelphia. Where do you wish you could go right now? Maybe Gil and I will go there next. Email us at thewhy@whyy.org with your suggestion, or you can tweet me at Shai Ben Yaakov. Gil, do you want to do the credits?
Sure. The Y is produced by Annette John Hall, Alex Stern, Kelsey Hansen, and my dad, Shai Ben Yaakov, with editorial direction from Katie Culinary.
Thanks for listening. We'll be back Thursday.
See ya.